Going Linux, episode 348, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill. Whether you're new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and open source applications and using them to get things done.
If you want, you can send us feedback at our email address at goinglinux@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 1-904-468-7889.
In today's episode, listener feedback. Hello, Bill.
Hello, Larry. It's a happy, happy Sunday.
Yeah, what's been happening in your world?
I'm an idiot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why are you an idiot?
I am. The quick version of this is trying to get Mate installed, and you've already laughed at me about this, but, you know, let everybody know that I pulled a Muppet move. And patent pending, by the way. And so I was doing some research and I accidentally clicked the wrong version of Mate, which was the one that runs on the older 486 processors. And you know, it's the 32-bit version. And so I burned that thing and I'm having all these problems with my Alienware, and I'm going, why? And I sent you some messages. We talked back and forth, and he's like, well, I don't understand it. You know, I said, I don't understand it either. So in the process of setting some other software up, something made me look at, why is this thing only installing 32-bit software, and why can't I find stuff? You know, because I went to install Discord, and it says this is the not the right architecture software. And I'm like, what do you mean? And I'm like, no, I didn't. So I looked, and sure enough, I did the 32-bit version. And so that's why I was having a lot of the wonky issues.
Okay.
So I felt like a total noob, a total stupid Muppet move. And so I downloaded the correct one, burned it to a CD, plugged in my USB CD-ROM, and guess what? After it installed, almost everything worked perfectly. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's amazing. If you use the right software for the right hardware, it works.
It's amazing cakes. I mean, you know, the only thing that doesn't work, and I don't use it anyway, is the trackpad. It's a little, it's something about these Alienwares. I'm still working on it just because I want to see if I can get it working. But I use a USB mouse anyway, so I don't care. Actually, I prefer it not working anyway because I always hit the stupid buttons when I'm typing. So it's better for me all the way around. But everything else is working wonderfully. Haven't had any issues. But yeah. So I just want to point out, I sound like a raving lunatic last episode, you know, crying. And I found out that I did get the other architectures are right. So Arch still doesn't like me, because the keyboard still doesn't work. Because I was telling myself, did I download the 32 of Arch 2? You know, that would explain it. No, it was 64.
Yeah.
And I checked the checksum on it, and it was right. So I'm like, okay, well, Arch hates me, RPMs hate me, Mate loves me, so I've been running it for about a week now without any issues.
So you're an Ubuntu Mate user too.
Yes. Is there any other? Fanboy.
Well, you know what? Yeah, there you go. So you started off by saying that you're an idiot. And I guess, you know, in a previous episode, you must have said, well, call me an idiot or something like that, because I got an email from a listener that said simply, okay, you're an idiot.
That's awesome.
So anyway, Jeez. But as far as your trackpad issues or touchpad issues are concerned, we have some suggestions from listeners in this episode. So when we get to them,
Yeah, we will,
maybe
but
that'll help. Yeah.
I have to
You're
say,
okay with it not working,
yeah, I'm
right?
pretty okay with it. It really doesn't bother me because the first thing I do is disable it. So,
There
I'm
you go.
saving myself some work. Thank you, Linux, for saving me a step. Okay.
Yeah, beautiful.
All right.
Yeah, and so as far as me, we just spent about an hour talking about our trials and tribulations here. I think I'll just sum it up as I love Dell support.
No sarcasm implied there.
Well, no, their on-site support is what I don't like. It's their depot support that is just
Okay.
fantastic, and their support from their people are great. So.
Since you won't, I will. Basically, he needed some repairs. He sent a guy out who promptly didn't know what he was doing and then broke the laptop. Now has to go back and get fixed by the professionals. Done. See?
Yes, exactly. Yep. And just to add insult to injury, the computer was running just fine. It was a cosmetic issue I wanted fixed under warranty. So now it's a brick. Well, I don't know that it's a brick.
It's a
It just
doorstop.
doesn't start. So anyway, we'll wait, see
Hey,
what
Larry,
Dell can do.
pro tip, you have to ground your static bracelet to metal instead of plastic. Okay?
Well, it
Just
was metal. It was a metal clip on his plastic
yeah.
toolbox. It
Okay.
was metal.
All
Yeah.
right,
Anyway.
let's get on
Okay.
before we get off.
Yes. Okay. Our first email is from Paul, and he writes, "Recording Discord. Hi, Larry and Bill. I really appreciate the Going Linux podcast. I have just one quick question for you. What application do you use to record your Discord sessions for the podcast? Thank you, and keep up the great work. Paul in North Texas." Well, Paul, we don't record the Discord. We use that just to talk to one another, and we
Yeah.
record. Bill records his end on his computer, and I record my end on my computer, and then I edit them together, and we're done. So we're actually not recording Discord. We probably should find a way to do that
Backups.
a backup.
Yeah. Well, you used to do that when we used Skype too. You used to have a, and that saved our bacon once or twice. But what we use to record each of our sides is Audacity. Audacity pretty much is our gold standard as far as recording. It always works. I don't believe we've ever had an issue. So just to kind of go back into it, Larry record we connect with Discord so we can talk back and forth. I record my side. Larry records his side in Audacity, and we time sync them together. We give a countdown. We start to record, so they match up, and then Larry takes them and normalizes them and puts the two tracks together. So it sounds like we're having a seamless conversation. And usually he's removing ambient noise from my side or dogs barking or something that comes up. So it. Believe me, the finished product sounds much better than the recorded rough raw. So, just fair warning. All the bloopers are removed, and he actually makes me sound halfway intelligent. So,
The names are removed to protect the innocent
yes.
or the guilty, as the case may
So
be.
that's what we use to record the podcast. So, you might want to try it that way. And if I find a good program that will let us record that Discord, I will. Keep this email and let you know, or I'll post it on in the forums. Okay, so our next email comes from Daniel, and here and it's a very short one. Thank you, Larry. He goes, "Bad news, Microsoft has GitHub now, or soon will." Wow, I heard that they had bought GitHub, and I heard a lot of people have moved out of it, away from it, and I can't really blame them because I'm not a huge Microsoft fan right at this moment or ever. So, what's your feelings, Larry?
Yeah, so I don't know. In the long run, we'll have to see what happens, what Microsoft does with GitHub, but with Satya Nadella being the new lead person for Microsoft, the head of Microsoft, I've seen them change their attitude towards a number of things, including open sourcing some of their software, contributing more to open source, putting Ubuntu as a subsystem within Windows. I'm sure they have some ulterior motive, like they want to be able to run all their servers on something reliable like Linux, but still have it provided by Microsoft or something like that. But the bottom line is, I see them becoming a lot friendlier. As their website has said in the past, Microsoft loves Linux.
If wait, wait a minute, didn't Steve Ballmer, the former CEO, say Linux was a cancer, or was it open source was a cancer?
No. He said that Linux was a cancer, and
Okay, I just,
yeah, but that was the old guy. That was the old guy. Come
oh,
on.
okay, I understand. Okay, I'm trying to keep up here.
Yeah, we'll see. Time will tell.
Yes.
Anyhow, Paul wrote in saying, Linux Mint 19 is coming. Hello, Larry and Bill. I would really like to hear your analysis on upcoming release of Linux Mint 19. Thanks for your support of the Linux community, Paul in North Texas again. So, Paul, you're going to have to wait until I get my computer back before I can even attempt to do anything with Linux Mint 19. How about you, Bill? Is that on your list of things to try?
Actually, now that I've got my machine set up correctly, I just finished installing a VM, and that was the one that I was going to look at because it's not broke right now. I ain't touching the hardware again until I have to, so I will test it out. But I used to support the project. But because of differences in opinions, I stopped even looking at Mint. But someone's has sent me an email, asked me to look at it, so I will. So I could probably do a review on it for you. I don't know. I haven't even looked to see if it's out. Is it out yet? Let me go look.
If it's not out now, it's about to come out. It'll be based on a 18.04, and Linux Mint is
I'm
based
actually looking up
only
their
on the LTS versions.
website right now and see if it's out. And let's see. They have the beta release out, so today is the 24th, and if they're on the beta release. So I don't know when they're going to release it, but I'll keep an eye on it, and when they do release it, I will test and do a review on it.
And some of the things I like about Mint, just in general, whether it's the 19 release or previous releases, I like the Cinnamon desktop environment, and I like some of the Mint tools that they've put together, and some of the features that they have, some of which have since been adopted by other distributions, but some of which are still a little unique to Linux Mint. But they still haven't done anything that sways me from Ubuntu Mate. So
Oh no.
for now, that's what I'm on.
I like the Cinnamon a lot. They were doing good work. I'm sure they still are, but like I said, I will test them out. But I was just telling you, I was raving about how much I liked Mate, and I don't care if I sound like a fanboy or not. It works. I always liked Mate desktop anyway. So, anyway.
Yep, it's good. It's cool.
Yep. And so Mint used to was one of our recommendations for new users for a long time.
Yeah. And it still is. If you don't want Ubuntu Mate, I think Linux Mint is probably the next best
Yeah, I
in
guess,
terms of new users. Yeah.
but there's also the tweak tool in Mate that you can make it almost look like Cinnamon. So I'm just
Oh, you
saying.
can. Yes. Yeah, and that's what I was referring to when I was saying that Linux Mint had some Mint tools and the Cinnamon desktop. And one of the things that I like about it is that that it is very flexible. It allows you to configure some things that otherwise you wouldn't be able to, and make the desktop appear the way you want it to appear. And Ubuntu Mate has actually implemented everything that I wanted to do when I switched over to Mint, with the panel options and the flexibility in Ubuntu in the Mate desktop to make changes. The Mate Tweak is one of those tools that allows you to do that. So I'm pretty happy with the flexibility that I've got. It's got that middle ground between configurability and flexibility and way too much, you know, like KDE still has, and I've tried it.
You had to say KDE. I cringe every time I hear those three letters.
Yeah, it's okay. It's good. It's not.
It doesn't like me.
And it's certainly not for new users. Anyway, enough of that. We'll go into more of that as we go into reviews.
Yeah, but I will do a review of Linux Mint 19 and let you guys know what I think. And anyway, our next email is from Oscar, and he went, Linux on Windows. Has anyone tried removing the hard drive, wiping with gparted, perhaps with Slackware, removing the battery perhaps to clear the BIOS? Oscar. I'm not sure. Is he asking?
I'm not sure what he's asking.
So
I don't know.
Okay, Oscar, I'll give you how I've wiped it without having to even remove the hard drive. So you don't need Slackware to use gparted. You can, I know Linux Mint actually has gparted in it. Ubuntu Mate has it. And I believe PC Linux OS has it. And I'm sure some of the others have it, but those are the three I know. Yeah. So,
and I think Parted Magic is also a live USB that you can run that would have gparted just from the live environment.
Yeah, I was trying to save him a step because if he was going to pick any of those, then he could say, okay, I want to install Ubuntu Mate. Well, you just boot into the live session.
Oh, yeah.
And then you use gparted, set up your partitions, wipe it, get rid of Windows, et cetera, et cetera. And then once you close it, it drops you back to the desktop, and there's an icon that you say install the system. So you can do it instead of having to restart and all that stuff. You don't have to do any of that work. The thing I will recommend, and I learned the hard way, is before you install a Linux distro on a new machine, or a machine that you've had a little while, just to make sure that your BIOS is up to date, because they've either introduced fixes or additional features that might make your life a little more bearable. So if you're going to go wipe Windows and install Linux, what I recommend before you do anything with the Windows partition or anything is go to your manufacturer's website. Follow the instructions on how to update your BIOS to the current, the newest and greatest, and then use whatever distribution, boot into live, use the gparted to set up your partitions, and then install Linux, and it'll make your life a lot easier. This coming from a person that used to jump distros 3 and 4 times a week, because it used to be a common joke. How many, what distro are you running today, type of thing. So, and Larry can remember, I think my highest was like 4. So I don't do that quite as much. I learned the very valuable lesson of VMware and Oracle VirtualBox and stuff. It makes my life a little easier.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, well, thanks, Oscar. Hopefully we've answered your question.
Yeah, I hope that helps. Sorry. Sorry, a little long-winded.
Yeah, and I am still not clear on what he was asking, but yeah,
I tried to cover everything.
Hard drives. Yep. We've wiped hard drives with various distributions.
Some of us more than others.
Suggestion of, yeah. Okay, moving on. Troy wrote about episode 346. Gentlemen, regarding Bill asking for help, One distro I did not hear Bill say he tried is Linux Mint. Well, we just talked about that. I think it seems to offer some of the best default compatibility with different system hardware over many other distros. The other thing I would do is try different kernel versions than the one that comes with the version by default. Because his particular Alienware computer is so new, obviously mileage will vary. And I know you have tried different kernel versions in the past for various reasons. And yeah, well, we'll just leave it at that. You still have issues, but mainly just with the touchpad.
Okay.
There you go. All right. And continuing, he says, Aaron, this is about Aaron asking for installation help to flash drive. I still think Debian-based distros work best. I tend to lean toward Linux Mint or Ubuntu. Poppy Linux is also good. He can try Zorin Linux. It's also good. If he wants good step-by-step instructions and access tools for installing to a flash drive, he can go to pendrivelinux.com. If you have a large enough flash drive and if you want to run your OS from the flash drive regularly and be able to save data to it, there are instructions for reserving a partition of your drive for data as well. Troy, aka Jack Death, aka Chief Executive Random Minion. And of course, he runs home and business computer services out there in Wisconsin. HBCS.com. We'll plug Troy's website just because. There you go. He says he's a Dell reseller as well. Should have bought my computer through him. Anyway, there we go.
Yeah. Okay, so thanks for all the good information, Troy. He's one of the more active guys on the forum, so he's pretty knowledgeable.
Yep.
Okay, our next email comes from Greg, and it's about episode 344 feedback. And he writes, Hi, Larry and Bill. Listener Ken asked about the Linux in the Ham Shack CD. I don't know if there has been any new release, but I recently discovered something similar. The Debian Ham Radio Pure Blend is a project of the Debian Ham Radio maintainers team who collaborate on maintenance of the amateur radio related packages for Debian. Every Pure Blend is a subset of Debian that is configured to support a particular target group out of the box. This blend aims to support the needs of radio amateurs. Ken can learn more about it and download it for free here, and the link is in the show notes, but I'll just read it out real quick. It's basically https www.debian.org/blend/hamradio, or you can just go to show notes and copy it. It'd probably be easier. It comes as an ISO file, which can burn to a DVD. It's also crammed full of goodness to fit a CD. Well, that's impressive. The live DVD will run on his computer without disturbing his hard drive or can be installed permanently at his discretion. Listener Frank and several others, including myself, have listened to all episodes of the Going Linux podcast from episode 1, but can anyone else claim to have also listened to all of Larry's previous podcast for Bitsworth? I know, shameless one-upmanship. Now that Ubuntu 18.04 is released, the latest long-term support versions can be installed fresh, but the upgrades to existing systems are not here yet. To check if an upgrade release is ready for the command line, type do -release -upgrade -c without the quotes. Regards, Greg W8FJK. Thanks, Greg. That's a lot of information, and apparently I can say I've listened to every episode of Going Linux, but I have not listened to Four Bitsworth ever. I'm sorry, Larry.
Well, that's okay. It's no longer in production. The website is gone, and the only way you could ever have listened to every single episode is if you worked at the same company I worked at, because it started as a podcast internal to that company, and Greg did. So, he's one of few who have listened to every single episode of every podcast I've ever produced. So,
how many episodes did you have of that old podcast?
I don't remember. It was certainly a lot less than we have of this one.
Yeah, wow. So you've just been podcasting. We should call you the father of podcasts.
Yeah, there's somebody with that title already. we'll just let that go.
Okay.
Anyway, our next is from Serge. And Serge writes about episode 346, Alienware. Here's a suggestion for you, Bill. Hello, Bill. I found these three articles. Hope your solution is in one of these. So there's an AlienwareArena.com link. There's a Hello World project at Blogspot link about installing Ubuntu 16.10 on Alienware, and an AltShiftKill.com article on installing Alienware, installing Ubuntu on Alienware 13. So hopefully one of those will help you, Bill, and we'll have links in the show notes to all of those things just in case it's helpful to somebody else.
Yeah, and Serge, thank you for sending those links. Larry had forwarded that your email and the next email, which I'm getting ready to read, Thomas's, to me for me to look, and it gave me some avenues of investigation. They were very similar, but they were having other issues. But it did help me figure out some of the quirks. So. Thank you for taking the time to send those to us. Our next email comes from Thomas, and it's also regarding the Alienware problems. He writes, I haven't read through the entire articles, but your problems may be answered in one of the following. Thomas, thanks for sending that. Like I just mentioned, it did give me areas of avenue, and particularly the Wiki Arch was helpful about the touchpad, but they were all a little different. Apparently, the Alienware changed so much from one to another that from one model to another that it's just going to be issues. And I guess I'm not the only one that has it. So yeah, guys, thanks Serge and Thomas for all your help.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, Serge also wrote in about episode 346 in Discord for Daniel. Hello, Larry. Daniel needs to type these commands for Debian/Ubuntu. And he lists a bunch of commands, and he says he might have to install some development tools. He will see what is missing in the errors as he installs these. So let me just paraphrase some of the commands here. So there's a sudo apt install flatpak. So we know where he's going here. He's going to use the flatpak installation method. And then install from flatpak flathub. And there's an SDK that gets installed. And then it says flatpak install --user and then installing Discord as a flatpak. So basically what he's saying is install Discord as a flatpak and see if that will work. And that's great. The Ubuntu and Debian distributions don't come pre-installed with support for flatpak. Which is why you have to start by saying install flatpak, which is great. Just a thought, the Ubuntu Mate, if that happens to be what Daniel's using, Ubuntu Mate does come with support for snaps, which is another alternative installation method. Yeah. And so Discord is available as a snap. And on Ubuntu Mate, you don't have to do anything other than sudo snap install Discord, and it will install it from the snap store, and one command away, and you're ready to go with Discord. So a couple of different options there for you.
Well, I want to add another option just because I'm want to be difficult today. I like to get the latest from Discord, and if you go to their website, they actually have Discord package for Debian, and you can just use your package manager installing and have the latest without having to go through a bunch of upgrades. But that's how I've been installing Discord, just because I like to have, for this one, I like to stay as current as possible. And but I don't know if I've used any snaps or flat packs. I usually get everything I need either from the repositories or in certain very limited from the developer's website, but that's just me.
Yeah. Now, I completely understand. And if you're using Ubuntu Mate, whether you know it or not, there are some snaps already installed. They're installed a couple of them by default.
Nice. I did not know that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's so seamless. I didn't even notice it. And that's awesome. Okay. Our next one comes from Joe. He writes, I want to relive my childhood through BBS. Okay. He writes, hi, Larry and Bill. One of my greatest pleasures growing up was logging on to the local BBSs with my 2400 baud modem. I would like to revive this by creating a BBS just to play with. Any idea on a good tutorial or book that can help with this, Joe? Oh, man. I remember. Do you remember CompuServe?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
It was all text-driven, and there used to be some where you'd call into the BBS, and you'd leave messages and emails, and ham radios also have something called packet radio, and they have some stuff they can use very similar. They have kind of like BBS set up. But
yep, and they had all kinds of shareware and trialware and all kinds of freeware.
I thought it's
problems that go along with that.
Yeah. I remember when I upgraded to 9600 baud modem. Woo, I was fast then.
Yes, absolutely.
But
well, you know, I understand there are still some BBSs in operation out there, so you do get something. Yeah, I haven't personally experienced them, but from what I hear on other podcasts and other sources, there are still some out there. And you should be able to find, you know, Google search or DuckDuckGo search or whatever your search engine, and search for BBSs. And as I've heard it described, if you install a text-based browser, you should be able to get into the BBSs. So I think it's a matter of searching around. There is a way to do it. I don't know what it is.
Okay. Well, I did a little research this morning when I was reading his email. And if you if you're using a Debian-based distro, if you go to your package manager, usually not this store, but just go and install. I use Synaptic. But if you type BBS in the search box, it comes up with a whole list of software. And I actually found one called FQTerm, and it's a BBS client written in Qt. And yeah, and apparently it's one of the most widely used BBS clients in China. And it supports Telnet, SSH1, SSH2 protocols, and can process ANSI control sequences. It can be used to log into BBS sites or even Unix hosts. And there's some other ones, some other utilities. So maybe that would help him out. I was just looking through all of them, and there were some that lets you do the ANSI characters, pictures, and stuff like that. So, yeah, maybe just give that a search. I think you'll be surprised that you can still find software for that.
Yeah, and you don't have to use your 2400 baud modem.
No, I heard that some of the older BBSs are now have connections to the internet, and they're using voice VoIP and all kinds of wild stuff. So yeah, let us
Oh,
know.
wow.
Let us know what your experience is, because I might want to just, for old time's sake, log into one myself.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, our next email comes from someone whose email address, they didn't write their name, so I can't attribute this to their name, but it looks like it might be P. Drao or something like that. Anyway, he says, I've got a stupid, difficult machine as well. In my case, I found some workarounds, but firmware, I believe, is the problem. Only 16.04 Ubuntu, whatever, works. We should have databases for hardware and distros sent from my iPad. So,
Okay.
yeah, so he's got a difficult machine and is saying that we should have a database for hardware. So I'm thinking he means compatibility,
Yeah.
which version of which distribution would be recommended for what particular hardware. I've got to believe there's something like that out there.
Well, can't you usually do a search to see if you know what the, remember we used to have to actually, especially it used to be about wireless cards. You had to try to find out what wireless card, and then you could Google search it and find out, okay, yes, this card is supported, or no, this is a WIN modem. You remember those wonderful things?
Oh, yeah. And these days, when I've come across a piece of hardware that looks pretty interesting, and I want to know if it's going to work with Linux, and it doesn't say on the box, and sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. I just, I'm usually standing by the product in the store. I pull out my phone and I search for the name of the product, and then Linux compatibility. And that usually within the first couple of links, it tells me whether it's a complete waste of time or whether there's some hope. Yeah. And usually you don't have to pore through all kinds of forum threads to figure it out, but
No.
if you do, that's not a good sign.
Well, I will say hardware support in Linux has gotten a whole lot better. Every year it gets better, but well, I didn't do it for this machine, and I learned my lesson. I've done it for every other machine, but I figured, of course, it's gonna work. That's what I get for thinking. So yeah, I understand we've both had difficult pieces of equipment that didn't want to work, namely modems and printers. Okay, so our next email comes from Mario, who writes, this is for the feedback from listener 346. He says, hi, Larry and Bill. Bill, your wish is my command. You're an idiot.
There you go.
I love it. I love it. Thanks, Mario. You asked for it. Lol, sorry, but you are far from an idiot. Good recovery, Mario. Okay. No, seriously, that's great. My own experience with Linux has been as I like to test the latest Linux distro. I install these distro in VM machines using VirtualBox. Not all of them works in VirtualBox. Yes, I picked up that habit too. So yeah, we kind of work together on that. Anyway, he continues. Can it be just a matter of hardware compatibility? Alienware, and like you said, are so gaming oriented, it may have some Windows only hardware compatible, even if it's working in Ubuntu Studio. Ubuntu may have some drivers that works more or less with your hardware, but the other one may not. I like those Alienware and Dell does have proprietary hardware, and most of the drivers are made for Windows only. So now, is there a compatible driver for your unsupported hardware? Which piece of the hardware doesn't work? Those are all good questions. My comment doesn't really help you, I guess, but just confirming your idea and share your pain with those Windows hardware's issues. Last comment. I do share your wrath on Windows updates. Yes. Quick story. Last April update, I had to cancel the update before it started because I am using Symantec antivirus, and it's not compatible with the new Windows update. By canceling the update, I couldn't get it to prompt me again. After Googling it, I had to do a few registry settings change and force it to install. Windows rule of thumb, never cancel any updates because you will lose it forever if you're not a tech savvy. Silly WOS. Keep up the good work, guys. Always doing good, useful podcasts.
Right. Yeah, so another good reason to stay on Windows, right?
Oh, will you stop saying that W word? Every time you say it, it's like someone just stabbed me in the leg.
Okay, I'll stop stabbing you in the leg.
No,
okay.
Just kidding, but golly. Windows, as I like to say, enriching our lives every day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. moving right along, our last email is from Tom. He writes about Ubuntu Mate on Acer laptops and BIOS. Hi, guys. Background. You don't need to read this on the air. We'll read it anyway. Thanks for all your work. I've checked out a few Linux podcasts, and yours is definitely the most helpful and relevant for people who are trying to use desktop Linux on a day-to-day basis, not managing server farms. I've been dabbling in Linux for about 25 years now. At first, it was just for learning and to look at something different on my screen. Later, I would use it to make some older piece of hardware useful or evaluate the state of desktop Linux. A couple of years ago, I started a job where, for the first time in my 20-plus years in IT, I am not using Windows. After 3 weeks of struggling to get used to a MacBook, the UI started to click for me. That's when I realized that I didn't need to use Windows on my personal laptop anymore and switched to Ubuntu 16.04 on my personal laptop. For the first time, I was free from Windows and things just worked for the most part. Anyway, context. After test driving a few different distros on my personal laptop, I landed on Ubuntu 16.04 and life was pretty good. When 17.04 was released, I was anxious to try out the new GNOME desktop. Too anxious, in fact. Even though my laptop is an Acer, I got bit by the BIOS bug that affected quite a few people. To make things worse, since my laptop is not very powerful, it ran more slowly under GNOME than under Unity. Since I couldn't do a wipe and replace using a USB drive, I just installed Mate and things were better. Since I was struggling using Ubuntu, I at least wanted to get to an LTS version. I upgraded to 17.10, planning on staying put until I got a new laptop. The upgrade seemed to be successful, but each time I installed a Linux distro, I find something just doesn't work quite right and sometimes requires some research. Same hardware, same distro, same version, an old problem will magically resolve while a new one appears. Problem. This time, I can't suspend my laptop. When I select suspend from the options, the screen will go dark and my machine will be unresponsive. However, the power light remains on and the fan will eventually start to run. I've done some research, but I don't see anyone reporting the same issue. Any ideas on how to get my system to suspend, or failing that, how I can fix my BIOS? Thank you for your time and keep up the good work, Tom. Any ideas, Bill?
It's a long shot, but I'll throw it out there. Disable the power management and make sure in your settings, I'm actually going to look at it while I'm talking, make sure I don't give you any wrong. 1 second, let me just pull it up. Go to Control Center. Then look for one that says power management and see what you get the settings. There's settings that one says put the computer to sleep when inactive, and you can tell it, mark that as never, and put display to sleep when active and mark never. And then there's another tab, general, and these are the actions that might not be set right. There's two of them. One is when the power button is pressed, and I have mine as marked, ask me what I want it to do. And when the suspend button is pressed, which is usually the power button again, or it could be a function key, you can tell it to suspend or do nothing. So see if those are set right, and try those settings. And also, there is make sure that you have your, let me go right here, that your monitor is set correctly to go ahead and detect the monitor. Sometimes I don't know why, but it works. And make sure you have, the latest drivers and stuff. But you can go in the same, it's all in the same control center if you're using Mate. Check, make sure you have the latest driver. And I think that might be the only recommendations. Also, you've got your screensaver. Make sure you don't have your screensaver enabled. But other than that, I can't think of anything. How about you?
Yeah, I think those are all very good recommendations. Make sure that the power settings are appropriate, because that's really where some of this functionality comes into play, is
Yeah.
through all those power settings. I don't usually see a lot of problems with suspend. What I usually see is a problem with Hibernate, especially on Ubuntu-based distributions, because the Ubuntu folks really don't believe in Hibernate. On the fast machines these days, the amount of time that it takes to come out of hibernation, which is, I'll explain the difference in a minute, is actually slower than it is to start from scratch. So they actually recommend powering down your computer if you want to stop draining the battery entirely. So the difference is suspend puts the computer into a low power mode, so that it when you close the lid of a laptop or you put a desktop into suspend, it's not actually running programs that will that you normally run. It is using a little bit of power though to keep things alive, so that when you take it out of suspend, it pulls the information about what was running out of RAM. And it drains the power a little bit in order to keep the RAM powered so that it remembers where you left off. The difference with Hibernate is that in the old days of very slow computers, it would take everything that would normally be stored in RAM that indicates what was running and so on, and store it on your hard drive as a file or series of files, so that when you start it up from, reinstall or reinstated it from hibernation, it would boot back up and read everything from the hard drive and start up your computer with everything running that you had running before you put it into hibernate. The difference there is it was actually off in hibernation. But Ubuntu has stopped officially supporting it. Well, I don't know that that's accurate. They don't publicize it, and the hibernation setting is taken off of the power management settings in Ubuntu distributions, most modern Ubuntu distributions. So you really only have a choice of power off or suspend. And suspend works fine. In most cases, it sounds like Tom has a problem with that, and hopefully messing around with those power settings will help fix that. I have put a link into the show notes about hibernation on Ubuntu, and it's from Fossbytes, and it talks about how to hibernate Ubuntu, how to enable and disable hibernation, and how to enable it permanently if you decide that you want to use that. That might be an alternative for you, but bear in mind, if your computer is a newer computer, it might actually take longer to reboot from hibernation and read all the settings from the hard drive than it does to, power it off and power it up from scratch and not worry about rereading things from hibernation.
That kind of makes sense. All right.
So,
Yeah.
that's it for our episode this time. I think we have another episode scheduled this time that we can actually talk a little bit about, can't we, Bill?
We can.
Your journey to Linux,
Yes.
the good, the
Journey
bad,
to
and the ugly.
Linux and Windows 10 and the journey back.
Okay, so that'll be our next episode,
Yes, it will.
all going well. So you can look forward to that.
Until then, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe.
We are the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
If you like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining discussion in our Going Links Podcast Google Plus community.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.